Oh, make me over. I'm all I wanna be. A walking study.
I'm so glad you could make it. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined this half hour by the president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, Rob Hengen. Welcome back, Rob.
Thanks again for having me, Maggie.
Always happy to have you because we always have something so important to talk about. We're going to talk this half hour about how we fund our arts institutions and our cultural assets, not just in Milwaukee, but more broadly. We can use Milwaukee to extrapolate. Tell us the research that you guys have been working on at the Policy Forum.
Sure. So we released a report a couple weeks ago called Curtain Time, which was an in-depth examination of the state of Milwaukee's performing arts sector. So why did the forum want to look at that question? Well, when you think about the sectors that suffered the most from the pandemic, I think certainly the performing arts leaps to at or near the top of that list. Clearly, audiences were not coming to live shows and performances for more than a year. And a key question has been, to what extent are those audiences returning? And if they're not, what should happen going forward? So we took a look at that. Candidly, I think we found maybe a better picture than we had expected. I think for some of the larger performing arts organizations in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Repertory Theater, the Ballet, the Symphony, they are seeing rebounds, some of the medium-sized organizations as well. But really, because of inflation, just sort of getting at or near pre-pandemic levels perhaps isn't good enough. And so a key finding in this report is that we have a very generous philanthropic community in Milwaukee. That philanthropic community is being leaned on more and more to support things like the performing arts, and it extends to the whole arts and culture scene, the Public Museum in Milwaukee, the Art Museum, et cetera. And the question is that sustainable? Can it continue? And should it continue? And what are our other options?
I also thought it was interesting, Rob, your report points out that there is, in effect, a philosophical question about how philanthropic dollars should be allocated amongst professional arts organizations. And just so everybody's got a bit of a level set here, when we talk about professional performing arts, you mean specifically groups that have boards of directors and that stage performances that draw paying audiences. And the philosophical divide is, do the philanthropists, the large donor givers, continue to put money into those big institutions that many of us are familiar with that are large tourism draws, or do they need to diversify the give to include independent, still professional arts organizations and not just the big boys that we're used to hearing about? Tell us more about that tension in the donor. Is it within the donor community, or is it a tension coming out of the professional arts organizations, or both?
It is both. And interestingly, our last foray into the performing arts back in 2015, in an earlier report, pointed out this philosophical debate between breadth versus depth. And as with so many public policy issues that we dig into, you know, really valid arguments can be made on both sides. On the one hand, you know, an argument can be made that the fact that we have a ballet, a symphony, a repertory theater, an opera, is this part of Milwaukee's identity as being a major city, a major metro area? You know, without the hassles of the New Yorks and the LAs and the Chicagos, but still a big league city that has professional sports and all sorts of arts offerings. So making sure that we can maintain those big boys and girls clearly has some importance. Another set of arguments can be made, however, that number one, the bigger entities maybe are more capable of raising their own money and can sort of survive without a full throttle effort by philanthropy, especially organized philanthropy. But number two, that when we think about diversity in the arts, a lot of the more diverse organizations tend to be small and medium-sized, and sort of they function as the minor leagues, where so many people in this sector who get to big jobs in the sector start off with some of the smaller organizations. So having an appropriate breadth of small, medium-sized, and large organizations also can be deemed important.
So who gets to decide, Rob?
Well, that's the multi-million dollar question here, Maggie, because, you know, it's funny, we interviewed lots of stakeholders for this, and sort of everybody feels like, well, we need to make some decisions here and we need to have a plan. But one of the problems is, well, who's the grand poobah? Who is the entity? It's not like there's an arts board in Milwaukee County with governing authority who can make these decisions. So I think one of the points here is that does it have to be the donor community? Should the donor community convene philanthropic supporters, government supporters, as I know we want to get into? Where does government fit in here? And others, and try to organize some type of a planning effort where there's some rational decision making. Because another major point of the report is that it's perhaps not surprising, given that we really haven't settled this philosophical issue, that there is very fierce competition among the performing arts groups. And so maybe some efficiencies that might be realized by more collaboration simply isn't happening here because this competition for those philanthropic dollars and the UPAF dollars, we haven't talked about the United Performing Arts Fund, but the competition for those sets of resources is so extreme.
Couple of observations here. I often talk about when we're trying to dissect and really dig into meaty public policy issues, that when you get beyond the partisanship and talking points, almost in every case, you're talking about two goods, two values, two things that we want a lot of, but that are at odds because of limited resources, limited time, what have you. So too here, certainly. You pointed out that potentially, you know, donors effectively are self-directing their money where they choose based on their own values. And one of the concerns that I've always had, I was a violinist, still sometimes do, play a little fiddle now and again, participated in the Milwaukee Youth Symphony Orchestra, got to travel with them, did a lot of jazz and Irish and other sorts of fiddling. It was an essential part of my education. And that if we leave it to benefactors, does that allow sufficient access to every member of our community, not just here in Milwaukee County, but southeastern Wisconsin and the region? The arts are such an integral part of, I think, community wellness and engagement that really should have an access point and an interest point for every member in our community. So digging into that tension, so let's talk a little bit about benefactor versus government, and perhaps we'll start with, what is the United Performing Arts Fund? I think most of us have heard of UPAF, but what is it?
So it's a fund that was created back in, I believe, the 1960s, 1967. It was originally, the purpose was, we have a wonderful performing arts center here in Milwaukee, the Marcus Performing Arts Center, that is county owned but run by a private nonprofit. And once upon a time, the major performing arts groups all performed at the Marcus Center. And so the theory was, let's first of all to encourage workplace giving, but secondly, to pool the resources instead of having it all, well, do I want to give to the ballet versus the symphony? Can we provide an opportunity to pool philanthropic giving for these major performing arts organizations and come up with a fair, logical way to then distribute those resources back to the different groups? And so, again, UPAF has been around for more than 50 years. It focuses on a subset of six cornerstone organizations who receive the bulk of the resources. But then there's another eight member organizations that also receive resources. There's been some controversy over the funding formula. So on the one hand, it's a success in terms of encouraging that workplace giving. On the other hand, due to some contentiousness regarding how the funds are distributed, it also has bred more competition.
We see this in other nonprofit sectors as well, over and over again, that when you have community service organizations, other nonprofits operating in the same space, often they're competing for funds. And so there are efficiency questions. In other words, if the spending can be more coordinated and with some agreed upon set of organizing principles, that can reduce effectively the administrative and some of the operational inefficiencies, because the dollars aren't getting spread to stand up different, effectively administrative structures in each of the different organizations, for people that are interested in the economics wonk part of it all. When we start to think about how other communities are approaching this, what are some of the other models that we see in other comparative regions?
Yep. So we talk a lot about a model in Cincinnati. They have a group called ArtsWave, which functions somewhat akin to UPath in terms of being a distributor of philanthropic dollars and workplace giving. But they do have a strategic plan. They have a set of strategic objectives, and the giving is tied to those objectives. And to the big organizations, they are funded over a three-year period, which lessens competition during those out years when the dollars aren't being reallocated. And they do have a specific finite set aside for some of the smaller and medium-sized groups. So that's one we looked at. There's also in Pittsburgh something called the Cultural Trust, which encourages shared services among the different performing arts groups.
It's interesting, in almost every area of community engagement, we're seeing these pushes to think about how do we bring efficiencies to the fore, whether it's combined fire departments and other public safety, combining nonprofits, or here in the art space. My guest this half hour, president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, Rob Henkin. We're talking about how do communities fund our cultural assets, the things that bring us together to enjoy life as a community, as a region, and as a state. Don't go anywhere. We're going to come right back with Rob and dig in even more. Don't worry, we'll even get to how do we conserve our wonderful natural resources and fund that in the state of Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Have I hurt you?
Don't be silly.
Acting! Brilliant!
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. My guest this half hour is the president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, helping us understand some of the biggest questions that impact our communities statewide. Today, using the question of arts and cultural asset funding in Milwaukee to take a deeper dive into these things. We've talked about models potentially from Pittsburgh, and was it Cleveland as well, Rob? Or Cincinnati? Cincinnati. Is this what people may have heard of is these arts districts? Are they, how do these different organizations get funded? Is it still a mix of philanthropy, or is it using tax dollars as well?
It's quite clearly a mix. And again, you know, there's no doubt about it that the arts, and the performing arts in particular, are going to need some support. An expectation that their earned revenues from tickets and other expenses linked to their performances are going to be to appropriately support them. If you want a healthy, thriving arts community, you're going to have to add some resources elsewhere. And so philanthropy plays a big part in all major cities. but a big distinction between Milwaukee and Wisconsin and others we have found is that there tends to be greater public sector support to fill that gap. That gap between earned revenues and costs in Milwaukee is almost exclusively filled by the United Performing Arts Fund and philanthropic contributions. Public sector funding is very scarce. In fact, in 2023, according to the National Assembly of State Arts Agencies, Wisconsin was number 50 of the 50 states in terms of per capita state government support for the State Arts Board, which is the Wisconsin Arts Board, which is the entity that would dole out state funding to local arts groups throughout Wisconsin. So we just do not have a tradition in Wisconsin of heavy-duty public sector support for the arts. Local government funding also is pretty minor. There's a couple hundred thousand dollars that the city of Milwaukee doles out in small grants to arts organizations, and Milwaukee County has something called CAMPAC, which has been funded at about $400,000 a year, the same amount since at least the 1990s. And so it's another element of the challenge in Milwaukee and Wisconsin.
What's up with Wisconsin? Why haven't we baked arts into our cake? Why isn't there a greater legacy of public support for arts communities statewide, not just in Milwaukee?
Yep. Hard for me to answer that question, Maggie. I mean, you know, it's possible that, you know, government leaders have seen the generosity of the philanthropic community here. Mm. The success of UPAF. UPAF generates about $10 million per year. Now, unfortunately, that level has stayed roughly the same for at least the past 5 or 6 years. And we know costs have increased due to higher than normal inflation. So maybe it's sort of a catch-22 where the thinking is, well, we have so much generosity, but we in government clearly have other priorities as well. And so we're going to leave it to philanthropy. But again, that means that gap grows. So, you know, but as I think we want to get into, it's not just the arts, it's recreation as well. And so when we think of Wisconsin as being, you know, a mecca for hunting and fishing and outdoor recreation, there are few states that compare to us in terms of reputation. But there too, when it comes to state government support, general purpose revenue support for state parks, on a per capita basis, we are at or near the bottom.
It's surprising to me that in a state like Wisconsin, with such a legacy of outdoor recreation and conservation from Aldo Leopold, of course, to Gaylord Nelson and Warren Knowles, which you mentioned in your report from a couple, just a year ago, I believe. What's holding us back from figuring these things out? What needs to happen? What should people that are listening, what should they be asking their elected officials to help support conservation and keep outdoor recreation vibrant in the state of Wisconsin and also ensure that we have great arts assets in each of our communities?
Yep. Well, as with everything governmental, it's priorities, Maggie. And so, you know, so the first big set of priorities is what's the appropriate level of taxation to support the programs, the services, the quality of life that the citizenry wants to have. And so, you know, over time, you know, there have been many competing priorities at the state level. You know, I go back 30 years, that's when I moved to Wisconsin. And there was a big sea change back in the late 1990s when the state made a commitment to try to fund 2/3 of the cost of public schools in the state to try to relieve the property tax burden. Well, the combination of that, the explosion in healthcare spending, while Medicaid is a federal program, there's a big state share of that. So healthcare spending has exploded, correction spending has exploded over time. And so as those things have taken off in terms of expenditure priorities, local government support, arts and culture, natural resources, those have sort of stayed stagnant. And when compared to inflation, have really fallen behind.
It seems to me, given my experience with Milwaukee County, an incredible example that sort of sits right in between what we talk about from a conservation standpoint and an arts asset or cultural asset perspective is the domes in Milwaukee County. I have quite honestly never seen a debate about trying to find funding for an asset quite like what we've seen in Milwaukee County. This debate over whether we should maintain the domes going forward or how to maintain them in what new form, who should pay what portion to keep the domes, has been raging for over a decade, as best as I can tell, with no clear solution yet in the offing. For those that may not be aware of the domes are three domes, glass domes on the near and south side of Milwaukee, just across the Father Grappi Bridge, that contain flora assets, all kinds of different plants from different regions. Each dome has a different focus. Where do the domes sit right now, Rob? For many folks in this area of the state, this has been a very hotly disputed item.
Yep, there's still not an agreed upon plan whether to preserve them, rebuild them, create something new there, or tear them down and try to make other improvements to Mitchell Park. And again, it all links back to this whole big picture we've been talking about, Maggie. In this case, county taxpayers are stretched thin to support parks and recreation, in part because state funding for counties has been stagnant over the years and state funding for parks and recreation has been stagnant. The competition is fierce. There are some who want philanthropy to step up to save the domes, but that in turn would have an impact on the ballet, the symphony, et cetera. So it's all connected, and I wish I had a great answer for you.
My guest this half hour, Rob Henken, the president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, helping to understand that the problems that exist in the public sector and in government, those ones that still are sticking around, they're the tough ones. No simple answers here. Thanks so much, Rob. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Your farm update is next. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. He is Brian Kelly. We are the Civic Media Radio Network. I got some news, Brian.
Oh?
I am going to be on Pete Schwabba tonight from 7:30 to, I think, about 8 or so. Really excited to talk about anything but politics.
Hey, right? be careful, though. Last couple of times, he's gotten me to tell some stories that in the middle of telling them, I was like, I'm live on the air. I shouldn't be saying this.
Always, always, always a risk. Listen, I've told some stories without any prompting on the air that I've thought to myself, maybe I shouldn't be sharing this
radio. Maybe we can get to some of that today.
Oh, that always makes for a good afternoon. Also wanted to share with you, have you been wanting some Civic Media merch? Not to worry, we now finally have it. You can go over to the Civic Media homepage at civicmedia.us and click on the store button up in the upper right-hand corner. You can get Civic merch, you can get WAUK merch, whatever your local homegrown radio station is, we have got you covered in the merch store.
Yeah, and don't worry about it. We have several large people. Large people in several different dimensions that work at this station and at the network. And I'm one of them, and it fits me. So,
and we all, yes, we have merch for all.
So yeah. And we have large headed people too. And we have hats that fit on their large giant craniums, including
me. You're talking about like Mark McGuire post roids when the head grows.
Except mine's natural.
Yours is natural. That's one of the things, you know, you look at the, I always used to quip, if you look at what the guy's head circumference was, if you go from like 7 3/4 to 8 3/4 when you're, you know, in your 30s as a baseball player, yeah, that's the steroids talking.
Maybe it's a thickening of the skin.
Sure. Oh my gosh, Cam from Nina asking if there's a 72 by 86 quilt with Maggie's face stretched across it. Oh, rue the day when that is available in the Civic Media merch store. Heaven help us.
Mark, I like this Perry's idea a lot.
No, no quilt with my face on it. That is a terrible, no good, very bad idea.
I'm going to set it up. Goodness. I'm going to set up in a chair next to me, and I'm going to pretend to feed you as it happens.
Listen, I am a foodie, love some food. Mark from Prairie du Sac, my friend, thanks for being patient. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Oh, thanks so much. And going back to your previous hour, that part of in Catholicism or Christianity in general is the lack of acknowledgement of the very last people to hang with Jesus as he's laying, you know, in the cross, was on the cross, were the women. The men had basically scattered, and after they had taken the body down, it was the women along with, I guess, Joseph Arimathea to accompany his body to the tomb. But it's the women who showed up, you know, on the following days to, you know, prepare his body, you know, to anoint his body, you know, that they came back and showed up, and they were the first ones that he appeared to. So why women have been relegated to second-class citizens since forever, and that didn't supposedly redeem them in the eyes of the church, it's always kind of confused me.
Confuses me too, Mark. I mean, I'm all for women priests. You know how to solve the problem in the priesthood? You know how to get out the rot in the Catholic Church hierarchy? Women.
My mom is qualified to be a Catholic bishop. It's just that she took all the stuff at seminary. She can actually make holy water. But it turns out she has the wrong genitalia to actually speak to the church.
Oh, gosh darn it. So close. So close. I wanted to talk briefly about what happened in Congress the other day. I don't know if y'all have heard this, but it is absolutely unhinged. I'm not going to introduce it. We're just going to go ahead and listen to it, Brian, if you've got it handy. And then I'll break down a little bit of who's saying what and the players here.
Employing Judge Mershon's daughter.
Please tell me what that has to do with Merrick Garland.
Is she a porn star?
Oh, Goldman. That's right. He's advising. Okay.
He's advising who? What? Do you know what we're here for? You know we're here about AG.
I don't think you know what you're here for.
Well, you the one talking about. I
think your fake eyelashes are messing up.
No, ain't nothing.
Hold on. Order,
Mr. Chairman.
That's beneath even you.
Order of your committee.
Order.
I do have a point of order, and I would like to move to take down Ms. Green's words. That is absolutely unacceptable. How dare you attack the physical appearance of another person?
Are your feelings hurt?
Her words down.
Aww.
Oh, girl, baby girl.
Oh, really?
Don't even play.
Baby girl?
We are going to move, and we're going to take your words down.
I second that motion.
So who will have to pay us? Okay. Ms. Green agrees to strike her words.
I believe she needs to apologize. No.
Perry, okay, hold on. Then after Mr. Perry's going to be recognized, then Ms. Green.
I'm not apologizing.
Well, then
okay,
you're
reserve
not the right to object. Perry,
I am Mr. not apologizing.
Now let's go. Come on, guys.
Why don't you debate me?
Mr. Chairman, the
I
minority.
Think it's pretty self-evident.
Chair you're not.
Yeah, you're
out
not.
Of order.
You don't have enough intelligence.
Your chair recognizes Mr. Perry.
Okay, move to strike
I'd
the.
Like to strike
I move
those
to strike
words
the ladies' words.
Well.
I move to strike
like
the
ladies'
well.
Words again.
That's two requests to strike.
Oh, they cannot take the
There's
words.
There's another motion to strike her words again. Please
right, okay,
get your
here's,
members under
here's
control.
Here's the correct apology, Ms. Green. Do you ask unanimous consent? Do you agree to unanimous consent to strike your words?
I repeat again for the second time. Yes, I'll strike right. my words, that, but I'm not right. apologizing.
Without objection. Without
not
objection.
Apologizing.
Mr. Chair, point of order.
Oh, Lord.
It's me.
Ms. Crockett.
I'm just curious, just to better understand your ruling, if someone on this committee then starts talking about somebody's bleach blonde, bad built, butch body, that would not be engaging in personalities, correct?
A what now?
Chairman, I make a motion to strike those words.
I don't think that's
Hold on. I'm trying to find clarification on what
quality.
Chairman, motion to strike those words.
I have no idea what you just said.
We're not gonna do this. Look, you guys earlier literally just
voted to do it.
Order.
I'm trying to get clarification.
Look, it, calm down. Calm down.
No, because this is what y'all do. So I'm trying to get
Ms. Crockett, you're not recognized. Ms. Crockett.
I can't hear you with your yelling.
You don't want
calm
me to
down.
Be, no.
Can you please calm
don't
down?
Don't tell me to calm down.
Calm down.
Because y'all
please
talk
calm
noise,
down.
And then you
you're
can't
out of
take
control.
Because if I,
look,
co-
chairman,
if I come
we
and talk about her, y'all going to have a problem.
Mr. Chairman.
Chair, okay. Order. Chair now recognized.
Okay. There's so much there. Here are the players. The woman talking about eyelashes, that's, of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Then you hear Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez speaking up. You hear Representative Jasmine Crockett defending herself. She's the one that then comes up with the bleached blonde, butch body, something or other. You also hear chair of that committee, Mr. Comer, speaking. What a sad day in Congress. I mean, we have many of them these days, but that was particularly grotesque.
Mr. Comer had no control over anything.
No.
It's a far cry. I mean, the British Parliament, they yell at each other, but at least they got that guy that goes, order!
Yes.
No one was going, that guy was like, wait, who said what? I don't know. What does that mean? What is anyone saying? What is happening here? The guy who was running the thing has no idea what's going on.
Just incredibly out of control. And here's the part that bothers me the most. Love to hear what you all think. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. The person who kicks all of this off is Marjorie Taylor Greene. She insults a Black woman based on her appearance. And then there are numerous people telling that Black woman to stop getting upset, stop yelling. This is the absolute epitome of the sort of crapola that happens in workplaces. And what's up with the angry Black lady? Well, you just insulted me in public on the floor of Congress and you expect me not to respond.
Are your feelings hurt? Are your feelings hurt?
So bad. And yes, Ms. Crockett, Representative Crockett, comes back with the clapback. I mean, absolutely shuts her down. You want to talk about appearances? And she does, credit to Representative Crockett, puts it in the form of a question to the chair. In other words, if that isn't a sanctionable statement by Marjorie Taylor Greene that can have the penalty to actually silence someone for the balance of a committee hearing. If that's not a personal attack, then me talking about her bleach blonde, butch-built body isn't a like, where exactly, Chairman Comer, is the line on personal attacks? What counts and what doesn't here? That was rhetorically, like, absolute mic drop clapback from Representative Crockett. And then, of course, everybody's mad at her for sticking up for herself. It's ridiculous. And, of course, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez trying to use the correct parliamentary rules to shut it all down.
Yeah, it just, like, she always wants to debate someone, too. Like anyone is ever going to debate her or if she's ever going to follow through on that. And what kind of debate are you talking about?
About what? The eyelashes, the bleached blonde.
I'll debate you. About what?
Well, and then of course, you don't have any intelligence. That is rich coming from Marjorie Taylor Greene. I mean, absolutely rich. I think AOC or Representative Crockett, I'd be like, nope, I'll debate you anytime, anywhere, any forum with any rules. Let's go do it. For real, because the woman just doesn't have the wherewithal to engage in a substantive debate.
To quote a very good friend of mine, does she know how stupid she sounds?
Absolutely not. She thinks she's scoring points. And The sad part is perhaps she is with the former MAGA president, because that, you know, he is the king of the personal insult, right? That's his form of debate, is I will just make fun of people, including folks with disabilities, like a reporter back in 2016. That's the brand of Trump, is I will just make fun of people, and that's going to count for debate these days. What an abomination. And again, if you haven't seen the video, it's pretty hilarious because of all the legislative aides around Chairman Comer trying to tell him what the actual parliamentary rules are, because he's got no freaking idea. That part alone is worth a watch. And then here's this little tidbit as well. And then we're going to go to the phones. You want to get your 2 cents in? Call, phone and text lines are open. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. So a majority of Republicans voted for Green to continue to speak through the hearing. In other words, not to silence her. But Representative Boebert of Colorado voted with Democrats to shut up Marjorie Taylor Greene because, you know, they got beef. It is like Drake and, oh my God, I'm blanking on the other hip hop star right now that's having beef. But yeah, the MTG Boebert beef still alive and well in the halls of Congress.
Do they wear pink on Wednesdays?
No kidding. No kidding. I'm Maggie Dawn. He is Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll take your calls and reflections on what has been an eventful couple of days, and it's only Tuesday. Don't go anywhere. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842.
I want the record to reflect that I did not call Senator Sanders an ignorant slut.
Refugee camp, conspiracy theory, why? Yeah, why?
You're just too good to be true. I think all you are just too good to be true for listening. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Thanks so much for listening, y'all. We just listened to a little sound, the congressional version of Dan Aykroyd and Jane Curtin doing Weekend Update. Jane, you ignorant slut, courtesy of Marjorie Taylor Greene. It was out of hand.
Jane, you ignorant slut.
Indeed, Brian Kelly. That is precisely what it was. Just, you know, in the halls of Congress with a chairman in Mr. Comer having no idea how to rein any of the melee in. Let's go to the phones. Jack from Merrimack, you're on the air. What do you have to say?
Thank you, Maggie. Well, you know, I taught in a variety of levels of education for around 40 years. And the only time that I ever remember hearing anything like that, just a wonderful exchange that was taking place in one of our finest bodies of government, pardon the sarcasm there, was when a bunch of fourth graders got into a shouting match, and I happened to be supervising them on a playground. And this is just, these guys are, they're unbelievable. These aren't legislators. They're a bunch of spoiled kids.
Yeah, the interesting thing, and I'll just say this, thanks so much for the call. Thanks for listening, Jack. It was completely ridiculous. And here's the point I'll make based on my 15 plus years in government and kind of being a Robert's Rules of Order, a parliamentary wonk, is as soon as that comes out of Marjorie Taylor Greene's mouth, the chairperson should step in, ask the member to take down their words, ask for order, keep order in the chamber, and basically, as the chairperson, instruct the member that they cannot engage in personal attacks. It is the chairperson's job to maintain order in those meetings and to not permit that. You do that by immediately stepping in. I don't care if they're on, quote, your side or not. You can't let the fourth graders actually start throwing fisticuffs. Dan from Green Bay, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm a Republican. I don't like MTG at all. But what happened there was ridiculous from all three of them. First what MTG said, then Crockett's response, and then AOC putting in her worthless 3 cents as always. I mean,
hey, Dan, can I ask you real quick, why is, Representative Ocasio-Cortez at, like, why was what she was doing inappropriate? What she was doing was asking for the correct parliamentary motion.
I don't even worry about that. That whole thing was out of control. My point being,
but my point, Dan, is that parliamentary motions and what Representative Ocasio-Cortez was asking was actually the correct parliamentary move. Those are the rules of that chamber. Why isn't it okay for her to appeal to those rules?
There's nothing wrong with her not appealing the rules. My point being is that I to listen to her is like, just watch her first appearance on Firing Line, for God's sake. She has the brains of an ant, for God's sakes. I mean,
she's a history. She has a degree in history. She's got a degree in history. She's not an idiot. We can say that we disagree, but the woman's not stupid. I mean, it's one thing to disagree. It's another to
watch her first appearance. Watch her first appearance on Firing Line. Oh, well.
I mean, watch Trump try to talk about any degree of policy with any level of detail. And I don't think Trump's stupid, right?
Talk about anything.
Oh, he does all the time. And great.
Stumble upstairs and do anything, right?
Okay, well, Donald Trump has also stumbled. Any 80 near octogenarian will stumble from time to time. I don't like the idea of calling women stupid when we disagree with them. I think sometimes people can be inarticulate, right? I think that's a thing, right? You can say that's not as articulate as it should be. Perhaps she shouldn't have raised her voice, but AOC isn't stupid.
It's not a matter of her being female. I have many strong feels females in my own family, okay? My
mother. Okay, so who's the stupidest male member of Congress, Dan?
I have no idea, because there's so many of them.
Aha! We'll leave it there. Thanks so much, Dan, for making my point for me. We're hearing from Mary in Wheatland, Wisconsin, Kenosha County. I used to listen to WRJN in Racine, Kenosha, but it's music now. So I was listening to the Shaw WAUK. Thanks so much, Mary. Yeah, we've got new format at the WRJN. Don't worry about it. We got big band hits all day if you need a little relief from the politics. But all throughout the broadcast region for WRJN, you can hear 540 AM WAUK and stay up on the political talk if you wish. You're going to hear on WRJN Don Rosen, Stuart J. Waddles, Cindy Humor, Kurt Volman, Terry Havel, Lou Regani, and Rick Johnson. Check it out if you haven't yet. It's quite a lineup. The reason I gave our last caller a bit of a hard time is that seems to be a consistent trope, right? When women speak about things, and I don't mean to say that our last caller was intentionally having bias about women, but again, this is part of how we view women when they start saying things that we don't like or raising their voices. And we do this especially with women of color. They're dumb, they're angry, we discredit them. Instead of looking at who started this problem, which was Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I will be really clear here, both Representative Ocasio-Cortez and Representative Crockett though they raised their voices, though they maybe said some things that might make some folks uncomfortable, they both couched what they were saying in the proper parliamentary questions, and like it or not, Dems the rules, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. This has been the Tuesday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Hey, anybody fly a flag upside down recently? I might get into that tomorrow. Well, what's that all about? Hey, Supreme Court justice with, you know, symbols of the Stop the Steal rally? Is that actually a thing? Tune in tomorrow and find out. We'll be talking about it. Thanks so much, Brian. Thanks so much to each of you. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But always remember, it is better when we stand together.
You call Senator Sanders everything but an ignorant slut.